Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Reptile Radio with your hosts, Larry Suttles and BT, the Rebel from the South.
He caught up to Forrest Gump somewhere between New Mexico and Arizona and handed him a box of chocolates as he ran by. He found Waldo, but let him go just because he enjoyed the hunt. When he enters an intersection, old ladies line up and fight for the chance to walk him across the street. He is the most interesting guest host on Reptile Radio.
I don't always play with pythons, but when I do, I prefer my own ball. Stay thirsty, my friend.
Wow, thanks for the great intro, guys. That was awesome. Hey, we're going to have a great show tonight. We have the Cayman Hunter, Bam Rubenstein, on. He's never been on the show. He's a first-timer, and I think you guys are going to dig this. This should be a lot of fun. Hey, Bam, you on the line?
Yes, sir, I am. And, yes, I am a virgin to Reptile Radio, so please be gentle.
Oh, you know what? We always treat our guests right, man. Have you ever caught any of our shows?
I caught one a while back, and that's actually what got me interested when they asked me to do the show. I said, yeah, you know what, I do remember doing one, you know, listening in once. That was pretty good, so yeah. I've always appreciated you guys. I've also always thought you guys were, like, high quality, and it's real important to Reptile, to herpers, you know. So, yeah, this is going to be fun. We're going to have a good time.
I think we are, and I want you to understand, when you say you guys, you definitely mean Larry and BT, because I've hosted the show about 5 or 6 times now, and it's always a lot of fun, but I always have somebody on with me, and tonight the guys just decided to throw me out there, so it's going to be all me and all you, so let's do this, brother. So now listen, we always ask, it's like a standard question here when our guest first comes on, is how did you get into reptiles?
Okay. Do you remember long, long time ago in a land far away when they used to bring in, it was free importing of caimans, and people used to say, oh, they're tiny crocodiles, and they used to sell them for like $25 a piece, and you get like a handful of them anywhere you went?
Yeah, I do remember. You know what? I grew up in the New York City area, and I do remember seeing them in the pet shops in the city.
Right, and they used to tell the stories that if you, you know, flushed it down a toilet, they'd have giant crocodiles in the sewers in New York.
That's not true.
Anyway, back in those days, I had a cousin who lived in Florida, and he had bought like 5 of them and brought them up to New York, and he gave us a couple when we were probably just, we were tykes, I don't know, like, you know, 7, 8 years old. And
wow, that's an appropriate pet for a little kid.
And then, you know, the funny thing is, back in those days, they said, you know, it never grows bigger than its aquarium, so don't worry about it. You can put it in a small aquarium, and they don't bite. Don't worry about it. You can feed them by hand, and you never have to worry.
You can feed them your hand, or you
and
can feed them your hand.
Breaking out, because you know, the tails aren't that strong.
Hmm.
Yeah, so we had
okay, and you're saying that somebody was fabricating these things just to move animals?
Yeah. Back in the day, that's what you heard everywhere. And as a matter of fact, when we got the one that we got from our cousin from Florida, my father went down to a pet shop and said, hey, what do we got to know about this? And the guy said, ah, don't worry about it. You know, they don't grow bigger than their environment. Just put them in a 10-gallon tank and you'll be fine. And about 2 years later, the thing was about 2 feet long. And it swung its tail and broke the glass. And the first time my father got a bite on his finger, we gave it to the New York City Aquarium in Brooklyn.
The old Coney Island Aquarium.
Yeah, Coney Island Aquarium. Yeah, on the way past the Cyclone, you know, and Nathan's Hot Dogs, you go to the aquarium. Anyway, so we gave it away. But they gave us free entrance to the aquarium anytime we wanted from that point on because we gave them this 2-foot Cayman. And
cool.
It was just something that was like, every time I went there to see that was my Cayman, you know, your little kid, you go up there and tell everybody, hi, that's my Cayman, you know. But it was just something about the reptile. They had a reptile section, and there was just something about reptiles that just always thrilled me. So as I got a little bit older, I started getting a couple on my own, and they were still fairly cheap. And then when I moved to Texas, we walked into a herp store, you know, actually a pet store one time, and we saw these two caiman, probably each about 1.5 feet long, and they were both in what was probably only about a 20-gallon tank, and they were thin, emaciated, I guess that's the same thing. They weren't eating much, I guess that's also the same thing, and the people weren't really feeding them well. And I said to the guy, how often do you feed them? And he goes, oh, when anybody buys a mouse to put in there. When anybody buys, yeah, they'll buy mice and they'll feed them. They'll feed them. And you haven't. And when was the last time somebody bought a mouse for them? Oh, it's probably about 2-3 weeks now. I said, no, pal. I'm taking those home with me right now. And you're going to give them to me because otherwise I'm going to call the Texas whatever.
Control
people, yeah. Otherwise I'm calling Texas and you know, you're going to be closed down. So that was the first rescue that we ever did, and from that point on, it just started growing.
All right, now maybe some of the listeners might not know this, but you also run a reptile rescue, don't you?
Yes, we specialize in Cayman, but we have been doing reptile rescue since 19. You know what? It's probably since about 2000, probably right around 2000.
Yeah, well, that's a substantial amount of time. I mean, I'm sure you have you got hooks with all the local agencies and people you could play stuff with, and you got to have that all in line ahead of time, right, before you start something like this.
Well, we went backwards, you know, because we walked into that store and we saw these two guys that were starving, and we took them and we brought them back to the house, and then we said, "Wow, what are we gonna do with them?" And then from there, then we became friends with the Texas Game Commission. Then we became friends with the Round Rock Animal Control people. Then we became friends with one of the local pet stores that specializes in reptiles. You know, it doesn't have a dog or a cat in the place. And then, you know, so we did it backwards a little bit, but it started out wrong. And we learned along the way. I wouldn't recommend doing it that way, but it turned out okay. I think the peak was probably 3 years ago. You know, we had probably 12 caiman, 3 or 4 ball pythons, 1 or 2 boas, an iguana. That was like the height of when we had the most stuff.
Okay, all right. So, well, I mean, clearly you were definitely still heavy on the Cayman with the rescue aspect also.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Anytime, as a matter of fact, we've gotten calls from Texas Game saying, listen, we got a Cayman over here, and none of our guys really want to deal with it. Do you think you'd come out and grab this thing and take it away for us? And we said, yeah,
kind of,
sure.
That kind of becomes your job when you put yourself out there like that, right?
And, you know, what's really great, too, is because about 2 weeks later, they told us that they had a couple of extra deer, and they wanted to know if we wanted the meat. Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, man. Yeah, always got a place to dump your meat, that's for damn sure.
Oh, yeah,
that's
we
pretty
did.
Cool. So you must have a really – you got to have – there must be a – there's got to be an interesting rescue story out there somewhere. All those rescues. Got anything good?
Getting one out of a pool or... Yeah, okay, I got the best one for you. Lady tells me that she sees a caiman in her tank. She has a tank out in her backyard, and she found a caiman in her tank. I'm from New York.
Right.
You know what a tank means to me?
Absolutely.
Probably the same thing it means to you, 25 gallons, 10 gallons, 5 gallons, maybe even as big as a horse trough, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Hank. So I said, yeah, sure, okay, no problem. I'll come out. And I walk over to, you know, get over there. We go back there. I go, all right. She goes, okay, we're going to have to get on the tractor and drive out there. Get on the tractor and drive out there. Oh, my goodness. So we're driving and driving out to this back. And then they have this lake in the middle of their property.
Oh.
And I said, okay, so where's the tank? And she points to the lake, and she goes, that's the tank. I said, what, are you kidding me? She saw a cannon. She saw, like, a crocodile. She didn't know what it was. She saw a crocodile jump into her tank. In Texas,
oh,
a lake in your backyard is called a tank.
Well, that's news to me, too, bro.
I've been educated. My wife laughs at me every time she tells that story.
She
knew exactly where the tank was, and she was trying to figure out why I was going out there with just a catch pole.
Oh, that's funny. Now, hold on a second. Now, at this point, we don't even know what's in there.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I don't even know what's in there. But that was the funny part of the story. They pull out this this little rowboat, and we get in the rowboat, and we push out the rowboat a little while, and I see cottonmouths all over the place.
Okay.
This tank was overrun with cottonmouths. We just put them back to the edge of the water, and I said, lady, you don't have to worry about that crocodile. You have to worry about that cottonmouth.
Well, you definitely don't go swimming in that tank, I mean.
Oh, yeah, so we didn't bother doing the rescue, needless to say.
Oh, wow. So we never identified the animal in there? Or?
Identified it.
You did?
Yeah, never identified it. No, I have no idea. No clue.
Oh, God. Well, I guess you're going to get those once in a while, especially with people's giant tanks in Texas. I guess everything's big in Texas, man.
My wife,
she
laughed every time I told a story. She tells a story. He didn't know what a tank
how'd
was.
End up, how'd you end up down in Texas?
I was getting ready to retire, actually. I was a firefighter in the Air Force, and I was getting ready to retire, getting out with disability, getting everything set up, and just going to relax for the rest of my life. And I was sent away. This, you're going to like this one, too. I sent away to Colorado for their welcome disc. You know, they on late-night TV, they send you, if you're interested to come to Colorado, we'll send you this disc. Come to Wyoming, we'll send you this, you know, DVD. So I sent away for all of them, and I watched them. I sat at home and I watched them all. And the one for Texas said, come to Texas, it's 78 degrees all year long.
Hmm.
And I said, that's where I want to retire.
Sounds like a party, man.
Yeah, it ain't, though. Yeah, 78 degrees. I think it passes 78 on its way to 104.
They lied.
And we have they lied. And in the winter, we have usually like 6 days of winter. Three in December, two in January, and one in February.
You're not really getting the full season thing over. But
yeah,
it's good, I guess, if you got caimans out in the yard.
Yeah, and there was a window where we were in trouble. We actually had to bring the caimans indoors for the winter because there actually were some 40-degree nights, like 2-3 weeks in a row, or even more, maybe. You know, it got down in the nighttime to like 40 degrees, and you know, the caimans are good at night. If it's 60, they can get down to, you know, 60 is fine. But 40, nah, that's not real good for them. So we had to bring them inside for a short time during a winter one winter. And it was really, I don't recommend bringing them inside. I don't recommend indoor tanks. But if you have to get an indoor tank, you got to go just do the same thing that you would, you know, building anything else outdoors. You know the sizes you need, build it right, make sure you have plenty of UVA and UVB. And you might every once in a while have to supplement that diet with a little calcium.
Okay. Now, you know what? We actually, I have a bunch of questions from some of the listeners regarding keeping a caiman as a pet and what sort of, what you would go through to create an indoor enclosure. Do you have any guidelines for these animals? I mean, what can we expect? And when I say caiman in this particular sense, we're talking about spectacle caimans, correct?
Yes, most of the time that's what you're going to find in most of the time that's what you're going to find in captivity is a spectacled caiman.
There
are all sorts of off breeds and cross breeds and new breeds, and you'll find the Cuviers and the Dwarf and the Akaris. But most of the time in the United States, most of the time it's going to be a spectacled. Now, but what I tell you about spectacled will work for every other caiman except maybe the black caiman.
Okay, and that's good. Well, black caimans aren't coming in as pets anyway. Those are much larger, aren't they?
Right. Those are the ones that will get to 10, 12 feet. Right, exactly.
Okay.
So here is, if you have a caiman, whatever the size of your caiman is, if your caiman is 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, it doesn't matter. Whatever the size of your caiman is, that length, double it, and that should be the width of your water. Triple it, and that should be the length of your water. You have a 2-foot caiman, you want 4 feet wide by 6 feet long. You have a 3-foot caiman, you got to make sure you have at least 6 feet wide and 9 feet long. You want to make sure you have 2x3 times the caiman's length as its swimming area. And then for the land area, you just want to make sure it's long enough so that he could turn around. So you have a 2-foot caiman, make sure you have at least 2 foot of land.
Okay. Well, that'll preclude a lot of people from even thinking about wanting to get one if that's what's required for proper keeping. I mean, that's a lot of space to dedicate for one animal.
Yeah, so what we did was we took the garage, and we changed the garage into a giant pond.
Oh, okay. It's good. I guess if you have the space, a space you can do that with.
Right.
Now,
that's what we did.
When you do that, I mean, what sort of ambient temperatures are we looking to keep? Do you have to heat the water? Is there what else would go with setting up the proper, you know, enclosure for a caiman?
Yeah, and yes, you're exactly right. You want the even whether indoors or outdoors, you want their ambient to be between 85 and 90. I guess that's really most reptiles too. Anything cold blooded, you really want, you know, probably up in that area. If I'm not mistaken, I'm no expert on the others, but for caiman, between 85 and 90 degrees is the ambient. So you want to make sure that you put enough heaters in the water, and your best bet is probably to go with, like, the titanium, because crocs like to bite things, and the glass would be bad.
Oh, so you're saying, like, a submersible heater, a titanium
right.
Submersible heater.
Water, you want submersible heaters to heat up the water, and you also want some heat lamps above the water to keep the area warm. So you have to make sure, yeah, you know, everything's about 85 to 90 degrees. But you want to have all of the heaters on one side of the pond, though, and all of the lighting, all the heat lights on one side of the pond, though, because sometimes they like to cool off, too. So you want them to be able to move to a cool part of the water if they want to also.
Okay. And, I mean, I'm guessing, we see all these movies with these big crocs and things basking on the shores of some river. I mean, they bask a lot, I'm assuming.
Yes, they do.
They take most of their thermal requirements for the day through a basking light?
Yes, yes, exactly. They will come up on shore during when the water's a little bit cooler. They'll come up on the shore, and they'll stay underneath the light, and they'll stay there until they're hot enough, and then you'll see them disappear under the water. Most of the time, you know, they're in the water more than anything else, caiman especially. I'm not sure about, you know, the bigger crocs. You know, on television, you always see, but you don't know how long they've been out there with their cameras waiting to get those shots. You know what I'm saying? You always see them on the shore, but maybe that was only for, like, the 15 minutes that the guy was shooting, you know? But I don't know. With caiman, they're mostly they stay in the water. They stay in the water more than they do anything else. You can peek in, you know, all day long and almost never catch them out.
Oh, okay. That's something I didn't know. And, I mean, there's no places in the world where caimans and alligators overlap their environments, correct?
Caiman and alligators.
In nature.
Caiman are mostly found in South America, so a little bit of crocodile crossing might happen. But I don't think a lot of alligator crossover. Although there could be American alligators down there, you know.
Yeah, one of the listeners had a question about that. I guess, well, yeah, but those wouldn't be you know, naturally inhabiting those would probably be just escape things or something like that.
Yeah, probably just, right, you know, looking for somewhere new to go, and they cross each other's paths.
Now,
I've heard of people in captivity keeping alligators and caiman together, but I don't think it happens naturally all that often.
Now, to your knowledge, and along that line, because one of the other listeners asked this question, do you know of any hybridization that happens in the group?
I'm sorry, what was the what happens?
Do they hybridize? Like, do you think, is there anybody out there breeding caiman gators or something like that? Or
hybrid, I'm sorry.
That's
You would think my New York was better than that. Hybridizing, okay. That I know of? I know there's a lot of crossbreeding within. You know, people are saying that they have Yukari Culver crosses and they have Spectacle Cuvier crosses, but I've not heard of anything crocodile or alligator crossing with caiman.
Okay. Now, from I was cruising your website a little bit. You got a really extensive site with a lot of information on it, and I noticed that as I was reading through some things, it seems like the females generally stay significantly smaller than the males.
Yeah, about a foot and a half usually. About a foot and a half. Usually, the females will only go to about 4.5 to 5 feet. The males can get as big as 6 or a little bit bigger. We did have one female at one time that grew to almost 6 feet. But we were really surprised. She just took over the pond and kept on growing.
Huh, that's pretty interesting. Now, you currently have, how many do you currently have now?
Right now, right at this moment in time, right now, we don't have any.
Right now we don't
have any. We found somebody up in Ohio who wanted to do some educational travel with them, I guess. I have everything written down somewhere. I don't know where it is. But we let them have the two that we still had left because we're looking to try to rebuild the enclosure. We had a little trouble with it. Then we're trying to make it bigger, better, faster, more. So while we're rebuilding, we have no animals right now.
All right. Well, I mean, from the rescue side, I guess that's not necessarily a bad thing. You want to be able to place these things.
Yeah. You want a home with any spot.
That's the goal.
As soon as things get back to, as soon as we rebuild and get back to normal, you know, every once in a while, one will come in and you'll go, I just want to keep that one, you know. I'm sure you know that. I got to keep that one. That one's just too cute.
Well, yeah, if you're passionate about the animal, of course, that's the species you're into, right? Now, you guys have actually bred these things, huh?
Yeah. We've had can I plug caimanhunter.com?
Absolutely, man. This is your time.
Yeah.
You can plug whatever you want.
Yeah, we've had that's the website that you're talking about. It's caimanhunter.com. Yeah, we had, I guess, two years worth of clutches in a row, I guess. A couple of our males. We ended up at one time having 2 males and 6 females in one large pond. And at least one of the males and at least one of the females 1 year. And then the next year, we believe there were 2 females that laid eggs. And, yeah, we were able to breed them two years in a row. Wasn't anything specifically tried to do. It just worked out that way.
Oh, yeah, that was what I was going to ask you. Like, what did you do to cycle them? But you just basically, I guess, just leaving them outside is how it went down?
Yeah, just left them in their own pond. It seems like they get very romantic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right after the rains, right after April, May, right after April, May, they seem to, you'll see them, go slightly underneath the water and you'll see the water vibrate. You know, they're, calling for a mate.
Right. Oh, so that's the males going through that motion.
Right, 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 right. And you'll see that, you know, we've never been able to tape it, though. I really want to get that on tape one time and put it on the website, because I think that's cool.
But yeah, that would be interesting to...
Yeah. And, you know, you did that, and, you know, a couple months later, I guess March or April is when they made it, and I guess sometime around October, November is when they laid their eggs. October, November, they laid eggs.
Wow. That's a pretty long gestation. It's about, what, four or five months-ish?
You know what? I may be wrong. I don't want to lie to you. I don't want to lie to all your listeners. Let me take a look real quick and see. I know I wrote it down somewhere, so how about we go over here and we take a look at where would that be?
Do you guys? You have these records written down, like on
yeah.
the website somewhere?
Yeah, we kept records of almost everything. Actually, okay, here we go. On my site, actually, caymanhunter.com/breeding.html.
Okay.
We've had four clutches. The first one, 3 of 20 eggs lived. The second clutch, 16 of 30 lived. The third clutch, nothing lived. And the fourth clutch, 5 of 20 lived. And it says here, I guess they laid the eggs in August or September.
Oh, okay.
They ate it in June, and they laid their eggs in August, September.
Oh, all right.
So I was wrong. It wasn't April, May. It was June.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty cool, man. I mean, that's not something that a lot of people in this country have done. You know, I mean, very few people have the capacity to even raise a crocodilian, let alone breed crocodilians.
Yeah.
So you must have some pretty interesting first-hand information about the babies.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Everything
was a little bit different, and we did them differently each time. We did make a couple of mistakes also. Like, you know, I said, clutches 1 and 3, out of 44 eggs, only 3 survived. So there was mistakes along the way as well. The first time that a female lays eggs, which we found was really interesting, was the first time the female lays eggs, the eggs are small. And every time she lays eggs after that, the eggs get bigger and bigger, and the clutches are larger, which I found interesting anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the girls are still growing, I guess, and maybe that's the function of the size of the oviduct. Who knows?
Yeah. But it's only 1 year to the next, and you saw a drastic increase in the size of the eggs and the amount of eggs that they laid. But it was cool. It was really cool. And watching them build nests, you know, that was also really cool.
I want to know how you go around collecting the eggs. I mean, I know what it's like to grab eggs from a python that doesn't want you to have them, but
yeah.
I couldn't even imagine trying that from a crocodilian.
You definitely need 2 to 3 people to do it. You keep one person always keeps the caiman at bay. You know, mamas get very protective of the eggs. So you keep one person has, you know, like a catch pole or a stick and just keeps the caiman at bay, and the other two go through the nest and pull out the eggs and put the nest right back the way it looked so that the mama doesn't know that they're really missing until it's too late.
Wow. And all the time, I mean, you're doing this in an enclosure that's occupied by other caiman also.
Yeah.
So that's a little wild card you got to throw in extra fun.
But again, you know, you're talking about animals that really, caiman aren't known to attack people. You really have to put your hand right out there in the water during feeding time for them to want to, you don't want to play with them. They're never going to be your pet, you know. I mean, like, you know, they're never going to be the kind of pet that's going to fetch your slippers, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You're never going to send it out to the corner to get your newspaper for you or the mail, but... But it's the kind of animal that they don't really want to spend too much time with you. The only time, and they're smart too. I don't care what people say about, oh, small brains, they're smart. Like when I walk in with the white bucket, they know it's food. So they all start towards you. So if I have the white bucket in my hand, sometimes they'll come out of the water and they'll snap at me thinking that I have food in my hand already. But if I don't have the white bucket and they don't see the white bucket and they know the white bucket's not coming in, they usually go under the water and go to the other side of the pond. They don't want to have anything to do with me.
Oh,
when you go over to the nest, then they'll sort of come around, want to keep an eye, don't want you messing too much, but they really don't want to come out of the water. They don't want to bother. They don't want to be bothered.
Huh. That's pretty cool, man.
They're only like 3 or 4 feet long, you know, the females especially. They're only like 3.5, 4 feet long, so here you are, you know, you're 5 foot, 200 pounds, whatever, 5'8", 5'10", whatever, you know, 200 pounds. You're still a little bit, predator to them.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's really cool. Now, all right, so we got eggs hatching. What do we got coming out?
Hatchlings. The hatchlings are about 6 inches, and they're adorable. They're just like little. That's the time that you put your finger in their mouth and they can bite down. And you go, oh, that's so cute.
So, probably the last time though that you could do.
Absolutely, the last time. So you have the animals coming out now. You cannot put the babies in the same pond with the mamas. The mamas will eat the babies, and so will everybody else in the pond.
Really, they'll eat their own, too, in spite of...
Yeah, caiman are one of the few crocodilians that actually don't mind living in family pods or in pods at all, any kind of, you know... Like I said, we had 2 males and 6 females, and they got along. You know, we never found missing feet or bit-off tails or anything.
Huh.
But when the babies are in there... And again, they have to be about the same size. If you have things that are all 3.5 feet and 4 feet, they'll all get along with each other. 5 feet, they'll all get along with each other. But you start putting in 6 inches and 8 inches and 10 inches, they'll snap them up and eat them like they were fish.
Well, and I mean, but you're saying even the moms would do it to their own young?
I can't be positive that mother ate its own young, but I've seen them eat them, so who knows?
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, when you hatch these eggs, I mean, obviously you were raiding the nest, so you are artificially incubated these eggs.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, the ones Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, the ones that, if you've seen animals take young, clearly those was that a situation where you didn't notice a nest and the young just hatched out of the ground and then ended up back in the pond, or...
Well,
it was
a little bit of both. Some of them started to hatch, and we realized it, so we started taking some of them out when it happened. And then we said, well, let's see what happens. I mean, it's theirs. Maybe they'll, you know, we watch Discovery Channel and Animal Planet. You know, maybe she'll keep them by her nose and watch out for them, you know. And
right.
You let 2 or 3 of them go in there, and we shouldn't have done that.
Oh, God. I can imagine that must have been
terrible. So terrible.
Oh boy. So now you got these little snappers, right? And they fit in your hand and sounds great. What do you feed these little things?
The babies, mostly crickets. The hatchlings, mostly crickets. Give them crickets. Just keep putting crickets in until you see the crickets aren't getting eaten, then you wait another day or two before you give them more. And then you just given crickets, they could eat like 5-10 crickets each, you know, a day, I guess.
Wow, that seems like something I never would have put that together with an insect eating crocodilian.
Because it's all the skeleton, cricket exoskeleton is the protein that they need.
Huh. Okay, sounds cozy. So, all right, now. I mean, do you have like some kind of, like what's their rate of growth, you know, out of the egg? Like how soon are you moving them up to something a little bigger and juicier?
I would say that the animals that we feed them usually are about as big as their heads. So at 6 inches, you only give them crickets. Then when they get about 8 or 10 inches, maybe a couple of pinkies, you know, a mouse pinkies.
Okay.
Then when they're, you know, as they start to get bigger from pinkies, you go to, you know, the jumpers. And then from there, you go to mice. And then from there, you can go to rats. And then,
so you're raising them like a snake almost.
Yeah.
And what was your rule of thumb, you were saying, the size of the head?
Yeah, about the size of the head was about the size of the food when they're young.
So, I know, like with this, you know, with a python, I'm going to give him one food item a week that's, you know, about the size of his mid-body. So how many of these food items a week would, you know, like what's an appropriate size? So we have the appropriate size food item, but how many times a week am I feeding that animal?
We called it Friday is payday. Everybody gets paid on Friday. That was
okay.
The joke.
So they get one appropriate size bite per week, or are they getting a dose?
Yeah, per week. When they
really?
Start getting big enough to eat a pinky, then they get one pinky a week. When they get big enough to eat a mouse, it's one mouse a week. Or when they get to be when they're big enough that we throw them in the big pond with the rest of them, if we can't find homes for them, or if, you know, whatever, we still have them. It usually ran approximately a pound of meat per animal.
For an adult?
Yeah. That's about how much I think we were feeding them, if I'm not mistaken. I think we went with about 8 to 10 pounds of meat every week in the pond.
Okay. And that's for about 8 animals?
Yeah.
Huh.
And again, I could be wrong about it.
No.
Let me go check.
That's all right, man. You don't have to be that specific. I mean, that's a pretty good rule of thumb. I mean, I'm hoping that a lot of people aren't planning on, you know, getting a caiman anyway, just because I don't think it's an appropriate animal for the average person to have. You know, you got to be able to dedicate at least that amount of space that you talked about. And you know, I honestly, you know, that's probably the minimum requirement, correct?
Yes, that would be the minimum. Bigger than that is always better, but that should be the minimum. And, yeah, I don't recommend it as a pet. You can't take it out and pet it. You can't walk it down the street. You don't want your friends playing with it. Every time you touch it or anything around it, you have to wash your hands because you don't want to get salmonella. Just like a snake. You know, you feed the snake, afterwards you want to make sure you wash your hands, right? Same thing
sure.
with a crocodilian.
Wow. So now, I mean, somebody must have been tagged at some point. You got any good bite stories?
The only one in our house that's gotten bitten was my wife.
Really? It was a perfume,
wonderful.
Probably.
So far, she's the only one. She's gotten bitten twice, as a matter of fact. Once by
wow.
a caiman and once by an iguana.
Well, I could see an iguana biting just about anybody when they're in season. Those things can be nasty.
We had one of the caiman on the table. We were doing our every couple of months. We would take them out, measure them, weigh them, make sure that they were okay. If they're big enough, we would sex them. We would check their teeth, make sure they still had all their toes and feet. And we used to, when they were small enough, we would put rubber bands around their noses because the tape was too wide and it would cover up their nostrils or their eyes. So we would just put rubber bands on. And one of the caiman, we found out on that day, was too big to use rubber bands anymore.
Oh, boy. That's a hard way to find out. Did she get seriously hurt? Or?
Nah, it swung its head with its mouth open and a couple of teeth scraped across her hand.
Oh, thank God. That doesn't sound that bad, though. But a lesson learned, right?
I'm sorry?
A lesson learned, and you got away cheap, actually.
Yeah. From that point on, that one didn't get rubber bands anymore.
Oh, God. I can imagine. That must have been fun to watch. Well, at least no one got seriously hurt. Now, let's see. Now, what do we got? All right, so you were Yeah, at some point you were making this you were moving your pond. If I read something on your site, you would looking for another piece of property so you can build a bigger pond. When you have multiple animals, like, does the same rule apply per animal? You know, like that 2-3 rule, or how do you figure? You know, like, it's just a touchy feely thing. You got to kind of see it and see if it works, or
Basically, it was touchy feely. We started off, the first time we built an enclosure, we started off putting 3 separate ponds, and they were each approximately 4 feet by 6 feet in the same enclosure, thinking that they'd all go to their own pond.
Oh, okay.
They really didn't. One stayed in one pond, and all the rest of them stayed in a third pond, and the middle pond never got used. So it was really strange. So then we went to the bigger enclosure. We made it so that the water was, I think, 20 by 20. No, the water was 18 by 18, and the land around it made it 20 by 20.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, that's what we had. I think we had 2 sides that had a good 2 foot of land, and the water in the middle was, about 1.5 feet deep, and about 18 feet, 18 foot by 18 foot.
Oh, that's not that deep.
Don't need anything. They don't really need it that deep, just so that they can submerge.
Oh, that's not that bad.
No.
Oh, so it's like a wading pool.
Yes, actually, at times, like when we first had the first hatchlings, every time we had hatchlings, we just got one of those baby pools, those little baby circular round 3-foot pools.
Yeah, for kids.
Yeah, for kids. Kids, for humans. threw a couple of rocks in there, threw a heater in it, set a UVA and a UVB bulb over it, and yeah, that's what we used for the first couple of months that they're alive.
Oh, okay. And that'll hold a bunch of them, I'm sure, for a little while.
Yeah.
Now,
there should be some pictures on caimanhunter.com.
Oh, all right. You guys got that? You got to go check out the website. Now, let's say, all right, so now you guys had a bunch of babies. Now, how do you place these one at a time? Do you sell them to a wholesaler? How do you make sure that somebody's, if you're placing it?
Yeah, we've done both. There is one pet shop in this area that we really trust. They do only reptiles, like I said earlier. They don't have a cat or a dog in the place. They mostly specialize in snakes. They have all sorts of snakes, but they do reptiles. We've always trusted them. We've always liked them. They've always treated us good, taking care of us. We need feeding mice or feeding chickens or feeding rabbits. Not chickens. We never got chickens from them. I don't know where that came from. But feeding rabbits. Ice and feeding rats. We've always been able to get stuff from them. They'd order it for us. And so one time we sold them quite a few when it was still legal in this area to sell them from the stores.
They changed.
From inside the city.
Oh, all right. And which city are we talking about?
Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay. And you know what? If you want to plug that store, man, plug them. Go ahead.
Zookeeper.
What are you talking about?
Zookeeper is the name of the place. The owner is Daniel Keeper, and his store is called Zookeeper. And we dealt with Brandon was one of the guys. Spider-Man was another one. He was all into arachnids. That's why they called him Spider-Man. They've always been really good. We've always liked them. We've always had good, they've always treated us good. So,
well, that's important, man. You gotta, you just have to have some kind of source to be able to do something like you're doing to make it, doable and not a train wreck to have to get through every time you need something you can't even find it because it can get ugly.
Yeah. And when they outlawed selling Cayman in Austin, Texas, it was kind of a bummer because the people that lobbied to get the law passed, I don't know. Yeah, you know, politics. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But
it's politics.
You know, politics.
We're a maligned group, my friend. Nobody likes the cold-blooded critters.
Yeah.
They're always jumping down our throats for something. But, all right, now, let's see. If, by chance, I wanted to go through the expense and the effort to create this enclosure and I was going to have a caiman in my house, you know, what tips and tricks do I need to know? Like, what, you know, all right, I know I need UVA and UVB, and of course, we went through the temperature requirements, and that can all be set up. But is there anything I need to know? Like, what kind of variety am I looking to feed this animal? Is there anything else? I mean, I don't know. I want to hear it from you.
Food, protein. They eat protein. They're carnivores. We found chicken is the cheapest way to go, but you don't want to, you got to make sure that you get chicken that doesn't have preservatives in it. If you go to the local grocery store, most of the chickens that you find have preservatives. You don't want to give your animals preservatives. So you got to find chicken that has no preservatives. And I don't remember offhand what brand it is. It might be Tyson, but offhand, I'm not really sure. But there is a couple brands out there that they don't use preservatives. You want to go with chicken. But you don't want to do chicken too often. So mostly we looked for the cheapest cut of meat at the cheapest place that sells meat. Sometimes it was, I don't know. Sometimes you could find ribs or something, or, you know, cheap or whatever. Whatever you could get, you know.
Okay. Now, did you ever use any commercial diet, like the Missouri crocodilian diet or anything like that?
I've read stuff about it, but we've always tried to keep them fed and housed and in what they would most likely see in the wild. And that would be, even for the feeding, what we would do is if I had food, I would keep it I wouldn't just leave it in the water for them to eat. You know, I would hold it on a prong and hold it up over the water and let them jump up for it, you know, like they would have to if it was, you know, a gnu eating, you know, drinking water at the edge of the Nile, you know, whatever. You know, or a wildebeest drinking, you know, off the out of the Masai Mar. Excuse me. So we didn't go to commercial products, but I don't have anything against them. They do have enough protein in them and enough calcium in them, and that's what you really want to do, you know. If you can't give your animals food with – if the meat that you're buying this week happens to have no bones in it, then maybe we'll add a little calcium supplement to it. You know, calcium powder, Reptical calcium powder.
Yes.
But other than that, just let them eat the bones and the meat because that's what they eat out, you know, out in the wild. They eat a rat. They're just gonna poop out the hair anyway. So,
yeah, believe it or not, I have a question from a listener about poop. What crazy. So what would give us the best, like, you know, the best consistency poop out there based on fish.
Just give them protein. You don't want to feed fish too often. I think everybody knows that with reptiles by now. The scales on the fish have an oil in them that isn't always good for the digestive system of reptiles.
Oh,
it's something that I read a while back. I don't think it's changed any. I know for caiman, we tried to feed them fish maybe once every 6 months. You know, put a handful of something in the water and let them chase after it and eat it. We found that most of our animals, though, would chop them in half and just let them float, and then the water would stink. So we don't do fish too often. So we did give them meat. We did give them chicken. And poo always stinks. It is the worst smelling. Cayman poo is the worst smelling anything I've ever smelled in my life. It is unbelievable. When you have to go and change those filters once every month, and you go, you know, And we had the filter in the water. So, again, you know, we'd get into the pond and we'd walk over to the filter, and the caiman would just run the other way. Well, swim the other way. They never really came over and bothered us when we were changing the filters. But we pulled
they were happy to have you.
We're still predators. At this size, we're still predators.
Right,
so
right.
We,
no, they were happy to have you in there doing the dirty work, man.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Because, man, it stunk. Oh, my God. And then you have to wash yourself like four times just to get the smell off of you. Oh, my God. Caiman poop is worse than baby poop. Wow.
Oh, man. Well, I hope you guys are listening if you're thinking about getting the caiman.
And you have
just
to
one more
it.
Reason.
And you got to do it.
Oh, Lord. Now, let's see. I got a question from somebody. Do you have any, like, I don't know, if you follow this stuff, because it sounds like you're just really mostly into the animals. But regarding the pet shop history of caiman coming into the country, that the early ones, they were sold as, like, little pet alligators.
Right.
But,
baby alligators or baby crocodiles, they were really caiman.
Yeah, okay, that was kind of the question. So he was asking that, like, you know, then they would call them South American alligators or something,
right.
And just to get around the fact that they couldn't really sneak gator in anymore. But I mean, look, we all know that it probably wasn't a good idea bringing babies that were potentially you know, going to grow into be these monsters that
yeah.
Oh God. Well, man, that was pretty interesting. Some pretty interesting. Information you gave us. Do you have any really good anecdotes you could slip in there for me at the end here?
Well, you know what? Actually, real quick before I stop, I do want to say hello to friends in the rooms and let you
okay.
know that Jackson Heights is represented. And,
oh, yeah.
And there's a place called Camelot in Virginia. The teacher is Sandy Crumrine, I think. And they're just getting into, I just got an email from them today, they're just getting into their reptile portion of their class. And I'm going to send them some eggs. They want some eggs for their classroom. Some
like empty shells.
Yeah, the shells, right, just the shells. So I just wanted to say hello to, there's a special needs group in Virginia called Camelot, and Sandy Crumrine is the teacher. So let me say hello to all them. Now, as far as anecdotes, yes, okay. When we first bought our property out in Thrall, where we have our property,
okay.
Our first enclosure, the one that we're trying to replace right now, we had first set up with a 4-foot concrete wall all the way around, four-foot cinder block wall filled with concrete, and we had a pond in the middle, which was approximately 15 by 12. And we were only going to house probably like 4 or 6 animals.
Okay.
And one night, while we were away, somebody got on our property and broke the wall on one of the sides of the enclosure.
Wow.
And I got I'm sorry?
Did they know what you were planning on putting in there? Or?
We already had them in there, too, which was really bad.
Wow.
No, I don't know if they knew or not. I don't know why. You know, maybe they knew. Maybe that's what they were mad at. But they broke down the wall. And of all the things to do, it's like, if you don't like them there, don't break down the wall. Help me build it higher.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
but they broke down the wall, and the next morning I got a call from Texas Game, and they said they found two of them were still in the pond, but two of them had gotten away. One of them was on my property, and he was, like, just crawling around. And one of them was in an empty pool 3 or 4 houses down the road.
Wow. And that was all of them?
one of them was in the empty pond. And a guy who lived across the street had found it, seen it, jumped on it, and was laying on top of it all day until we were able to get out there.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been me. Something about laying on an animal all day. Hey, you know, I'll watch it for you, but I'm not going to lay on the thing. Oh, wow. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, running around, right? I mean, when they get out, they're just basically walking. They're not running anywhere.
Hey, they walk in, and they'll find a place that they like, and they'll just stay. You know, they could have realized that they were Maybe they were thinking they were going to find a new pond all to themselves. They wouldn't have to share it with their three, you know, cousins or whatever. Right. But there was no reason for them to do it. Fox News came out and wanted to do a whole story on the Cayman. And they even said to the game warden something about, well, is it okay if he even has these things? And the game warden goes, yeah, this is Bam Rubenstein. He's got... Yeah, this guy's good. Don't worry about it. He's good.
Oh,
whole thing. The neighbors just didn't like the idea.
Yeah, yeah. People have hang-ups about stuff. Yeah, it's a lot,
especially
a lot
reptiles.
Dangerous
when they hear that, when they hear that, I don't have any problems going over to your property and getting a snake that you found in your bathtub. They think that I'm going to bring the snake out there and let him loose in their backyard. So,
yeah,
oh well.
That sucks. What are you going to do, man? That's people.
Yeah, people. Right. I don't know. Oh, well.
if it was just the animals, it wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Well, Bam, that was a pretty good hour we spent, man. I really appreciate
you
coming on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
It was very nice having you, and you were a great guest. And, you know, are you rebuilding your thing? Are you going to be taking Cayman rescues in anytime soon, or should we put you on a calendar for some?
Absolutely.
Like,
we're not calendared yet, but if somebody calls me up tomorrow and says, can you take one, I'll build a temporary enclosure for it. I'm not going to stop. If it's important to you, you need it done, we'll take care of it. Go ahead. Shoot us an email.
That's great. You want to give us your website again one more time, Bam?
It's Cayman Hunter, CaimanHunter, CaimanHunter.com. And
that's
my
great.
Email address is everywhere on it.
Okay, so we can contact you from the
CaimanHunter.
Website.
CaimanHunter.com.
Great. Thank you so much for calling in, Ben. Thank you for your time, and much appreciated, man.
Oh, hey, thank you. Thank you. And keep up the good work, guys.
Hey, likewise. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Well, guys, that was Bam Rubenstein, CaimanHunter.com. I thought Bam was a pretty good guest. He was definitely interesting to talk to. I hope I got to most of your questions. There were some that were a little non-species specific, and I think once I got into the show, I kind of, you know, I didn't want to ask too many things that maybe weren't appropriate for Bam, but I do appreciate all the questions you guys sent. Just let's see, let's do a little bookkeeping for the guys. Larry and BT obviously are not here tonight. I'm hopefully doing a decent job filling in for those guys. They got some big shoes to fill. And I just wanted to get a couple things out there just to take care of some stuff. Back in Texas again, the NARBC show, the Arlington show, is coming up February 12th and 13th. If you guys are going, it would be great if you wanted to meet other BLBC members. Make sure you guys have your Reptile Radio or BC colors on, BLBC colors on, so we know who we are when we bump into each other. That would be dynamite. If you still don't have your official club swag, all you got to do, and this is for anybody, you don't have to even be a member, but of course it's cool if you are, go to the club information section in the BLBC boards and look for the thread entitled BLBC T-shirts, started by Jay Chandler. You click on the link in the first post of the thread, and you're there. There's an online, basically, T-shirt shop, and it's a custom T-shirt shop, but you can get any of the standard logos and stuff and trick them out any way you want. I think I mentioned on a previous show that some people use them, you know, they're getting BLBC on one side and then they're putting their company name on the other, and it's a pretty cool-looking thing when it's all said and done. On the boards, I've seen a lot of locks and a lot of ovulations and a lot of eggs coming, and it looks like we're going to have a good season. If everybody's having the same crap weather we are here in the Northeast, that's definitely getting the critters going, so... We're going to be looking for a lot of stuff coming from you guys soon. And if somebody out there is listening and they're not on the Bush League boards, you know, if you want to see any of this stuff, you could definitely get on there and check it out. It's free for the public. Of course, we'd rather you join and become a member and contribute and have fun. But if you don't, you could just look and drool like the rest of us do. Way up north, where it's a lot colder than it is here probably, we're looking at the WCRE, the Western Canadian Reptile Expo, and now it's only 7 months away. So, you know, for you guys that like to plan early, get planning. It's actually less than 7 months away tonight because it's on August 27th and 28th of 2011. And the reason I bring it up is because we're going to have a representative from the BLBC boards there. Trevor McGarrett from TNT Reptiles is going to be there, you know, just talking about joining and maybe doing a little recruiting for us. And that's going to be held at the Capri Hotel and Conference Center in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. So, guys, it was a lot of fun tonight. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the show. We're going to have a great guest next week again. I'm sure you guys know him. You know him on the boards as Nick Mutton. Everybody else knows him as Nick Mutton. Nick Mutton's a pretty well-known guy. And Nick Mutton's got some really cool, obscure things going on, you know, besides the standard, you know, bull pythons, carpets, and things that we, you know, can all just dive right into, you know, at your local herp show. Nick's got things that you can't even get. And next week we're going to try to touch on some of those interesting boas and pythons from species that you don't commonly see. And we're going to tap Nick for some information. He's going to hopefully give us the lowdown, as he always does, in detail. And we're going to be looking pretty good. So look for us next week. Nick Mutton's going to be the guest. I promise you a good show. And until then, have a great weekend. Speak to you then. Good night.
Hello. Please leave a message after the tone.